Everybody, welcome to Wednesday, February 20th, 2019, work session for the Springfield Planning Commission. I'll call the order. And for attendance, it looks like everyone is here, so I won't go through the motions on that. We have one work session item, which is Planning Commission training on ethics, public meetings, public records. And then there's also something regarding Springfield City policy and respectful work environment. So that will be presented by our staff attorneys. First of all, I believe there's a couple changes to the agenda. The date is wrong. And then on our regular session agenda, the date is wrong and the members of the Planning Commission are wrong. So go ahead. Just go ahead and mention that. And then, do we take public testimony at work sessions? No.
Nope.
If it's community firm, if it's CCI meeting, we do. Okay, great. So with that in mind, we'll go ahead and go to our staff attorneys.
Well, hello. My name is Mary Bridget Smith. I'm the city attorney. I work with Christina. And we're here tonight to do the annual training on mainly public ethics for public officials, which you all are as being part of the Planning Commission. But also wanted to go over some city administrative regulations that apply to planning commissioners, so you're aware of them. And then we thought what we would do with the ethics is go through some hypotheticals so we could have a little more of a discussion than just regurgitating information to you all. So, and I just want to say I'm happy to be here. Planning Commission is always near and dear to my heart because that's where I learned to do public meetings when I first started working, and Joe Leahy was still the city attorney. I did Christina's work and came to Planning Commission. So, and everybody's new. So,
hopefully not everybody.
Except Commissioner Vos. So, anyway, happy to be here, and I'm glad I'm hearing about stuff that's happening in Planning Commission and think it's going really well, so I'm happy. So, what I'd like to do is look at the materials that you received in your packet. I'm going to go out of order a little bit because I don't want to run out of time and then not talk about a few things. The first thing, and I'm going to hand out hard copies, this wasn't included in your packet, but this is an explanation of the statement of economic interest. So this is connected to your obligations under public ethics. And by law, certain volunteers and public officials are required to file a statement of economic interest. And it's something that you'll receive an email, and then you walk through it and you do an electronic submission of the form. And planning commissioners who have been on the Planning Commission for a while are familiar with this. This is from provided by the Oregon Government Ethics Commission. It's a nice way to walk you through it if you have questions, so it's a good thing to have with you when you're doing it. And then there are also some training videos on the OGEC website which are helpful. AJ Ripka, the city recorder, is the person who coordinates this, but you know, it's the kind of thing that once you're doing it with your computer, it's not like it's not like you can just call her or have her be over your shoulder sometimes, so it's a little bit different because you're submitting electronic form. But it talks about having to submit your economic statement. Once you get the email, you have 90 days from the email, and the deadline is April 15th, so we're getting to that time of year. And so please do not ignore the notification that you receive. And then answer the questions and note that I guess there are 10 questions, and the last questions are only having to do if you have a gift and the source of the gift has a legislative or an administrative interest. So keep that in mind. I think many of you probably won't have to fill out the whole thing. So anyway, I guess that's one kind of pitfall that happens to folks. So anyway, hard copy for you. Also on the what we call OGEC, which is the Oregon Government Ethics Commission website. So it's a handy thing to have.
And it will go to your city email. Yeah. So if we're having trouble, give me your tablet so we can get that going for you.
Yeah. Good. Okay. And then the first thing I wanted to talk about was the city's administrative regulations. So that is an attachment in your packet, which is number 4, and it's selected Springfield administrative regulations. So these administrative regulations are what you would think of as, you know, your company policies, essentially. And most of them apply to city employees, but there are a few that will apply to volunteers and or elected officials, depending on what the topic is. And so we, and the city's going through a big project to update a lot of our administrative regulations. So probably over the next few years, we'll be coming to you with additional ones that might apply to the Planning Commission. But these are some key ones to be thinking about, particularly that I think the social media one is one that comes up. In terms of, are there limitations on my comments when I make on my personal social media? So we wanted to talk about that. Respectful workplace is important to talk about and to be aware of, that City of Springfield has that type of regulation. So you all know that. And then, as always, the last one is the use of city equipment. And I'll start there because that's sort of the easy one. As you all know, you have given iPads. Those are city equipment. The thing to keep in mind with those is that there's not an expectation of privacy when you're using city equipment, so just keep that in mind. Incidental use is not a problem, but it's not private. And it is really the city's machine and should be used for city work. And it's a really useful thing for city work, particularly for Planning Commission, because the packets are so big that it is nice to get it on an iPad. But just keep in mind that it's different than your own personal phone or iPad. So the city's respectful place to work is another administrative regulation. So this puts down on paper that the city is committed to having a positive and diverse and professional workplace. It's an important, I think, policy to set citywide, and I think it's important also to note that it applies to everyone, elected officials and volunteers. And you want to be thinking about rights of employees and volunteers with respect to other people. So if you observe, you know, somebody who you think is getting discriminated against or retaliated or improper behavior towards that person, that it's important to feel like you can report that and the city would investigate it and try and figure out what's happening. So something to think about as you're interacting with staff or other volunteers and that kind of thing. If you look at the regulation in detail, it does go through different types of potential issues in terms of the types of conduct that's not tolerated, and obviously these seem like no-brainers, but it's, again, important to have in policy. So physical harassment, religious discrimination, sexual harassment, verbal harassment, visual forms of harassment, and think about that as we when we start talking about social media, and workplace bullying. And then also keep in mind the resolutions that you can have for dealing with work conflicts. You know, sometimes they can be quite casual or sort of low level. It might just be a conversation between people, or it can be fully investigated if the behavior really is problematic. So kind of run the gamut. Also note, Section 6 is an important section. So retaliation is prohibited. So this means if Christina brings forward has a complaint, then I can't retaliate against her for bringing forward that complaint. And it's important that people feel safe and that they can bring forward these kinds of complaints and concerns without worrying about something's going to happen to their job. And that applies to you as well as volunteers. So, any questions about respectful workplace policy or use of city equipment? I'll continue there. Okay. So the interesting one, I guess I would say from my perspective, is the personal use of social media. So this is a topic that I have certainly seen in the time that I've been advising cities, a lot of change in how people communicate and how that impacts their service to the city. So clearly, social media is a part of almost all of our lives, right? Almost everybody, you know, has some form of social media, or people recognize, and the city certainly does, that it can be important to people. The part that gets tricky is that if you, in your capacity as a public official, need to be careful that you're not speaking on behalf of the city when you're really speaking on your own behalf, right? So the way to avoid that is you can certainly post things on your own. That's no problem, but it is helpful to say these are my opinions and not that of the Planning Commission, particularly if your comments are connected to like planning type stuff. So people are clear. Also think about it around election season, you know, when you start to see a lot more political posts. But it's something important to keep in mind. I think the way the courts have really looked at this is that, you know, that's really connected to your rights of free speech and your ability to express yourself. Where people get into problems is if they're discriminatory, right? You know, if they're doing discriminatory or obscene comments. But as we know, many of us know, the internet doesn't necessarily have to be like a nice place, right? So, and it's not always a nice place. Sometimes there are comments that seem really disrespectful. But those comments may not violate this policy because they're not discriminatory or obscene or that level. So anyway, it's something to keep in mind, and it's been interesting to watch how the courts and society have kind of dealt with that, I think, how people communicate with one another. But this policy is quite clear that city, with your social media, you know, your use of it as a public official, no harassment of other people, no discriminatory content, nothing obscene. And when you are posting on your own behalf, it's just important and really helpful to say that that's what you're doing, particularly if they're topics that are connected to Planning Commission type of stuff. Any questions about that? Sure.
So I'm just curious about, you say make sure that when you're posting something that you don't want to be seen as your opinion as a planning commissioner, say that. Is there any time that it's appropriate to post on social media in the capacity of a planning commissioner?
Oh, that's a good question. I think, and Christina, feel free to jump in if you think of that.
But I think the policy addresses official, like the official, the city's official social media.
Right.
So there's an official City of Springfield social media page, and that's where I think the city shares things in people's official capacities. So I would say that under this policy, none of you have access to those official channels. So I would recommend just not using social media to post things as speaking on behalf of the Planning Commission.
Okay, that's why I'd assumed, but I want to clarify based
on that's my take on that.
Yeah, I think maybe technically you might be able to like something as a Planning Commissioner, right? Like if the city put out, I don't know, whatever, like we're having a Planning Commission meeting next Tuesday to talk about the TSP stuff, and you want to sort of link that on to people so they're aware,
right.
You know, that's appropriate, but it can't be like, you know, I don't know, by the way, this is how I'm going to vote on the next Planning Commission meeting kind of stuff, or here's what I think of what's happening.
I've shared, I've had like city job announcements. I've shared those to my personal page and haven't put, this is my personal opinion and not connected to my job, because it's not an opinion. I'm just sharing it.
Right.
I think I could probably share it and say something along the lines of the city's a great place to work. I might then want to say that's my personal opinion.
Right. Come to an open house, that'd be great. I think that would be helpful.
I think if you're sharing an opinion about something and it could be perceived as speaking, somebody could perceive it that you were speaking on behalf of others. It's really about whether you're speaking, I think, on behalf of others or that there's some official,
right,
you know, official support behind that statement. You don't want to wrongly convey that message.
Mr. Quigley?
You pretty much answered my question, but what I've done in the past is, like, there's a planning commissioner position open.
Yeah, that's great.
Just an announcement to friends and that type of thing.
I think that's
great.
Appointed positions.
Now, and you're stating that you can express the opinion, the city is a great place to work.
Mm-hmm.
Now, wouldn't that be just as dangerous as if you happen to think that the city is a lousy place to work?
Yeah, I think I would caption it with that's my personal opinion,
yeah,
and I'm
right.
not speaking my, you know, so, yeah.
I mean,
I would have a free speech right to do that.
Yeah.
But I don't know why I would be sharing the job posting if I knew that was a lousy place.
Well, you may be obligated to do that, whether you wanted to or not.
Yeah. So you do still have, it's important to remember, even though you're public officials, you do have First Amendment rights. It's just important to be clear about when you're speaking as a person and when you're part of the Planning Commission or part of the city. So it shouldn't be too bad. But definitely sharing thing I think is helpful, especially for planning commissioners who you know, as we engage on the Development Code project and those kinds of things, we're going to have a lot of public interaction. It's really helpful. I think it would be nice. So, and then the city maintains, obviously, as you know, has its own social media sites. And there are employees at the city where part of their job is to maintain those. So they have other kind of additional regulations about the kinds of things they can post. And for example, you can't remove comments that are seen as negative towards the city, right? Because, you know, me, if I were just kind of Joe Public, I would have the right to be able to post to the city, I don't like that policy or I don't like that kind of stuff. So you can, we actually can't remove that. If something is obscene or discriminatory, we can hide it, but we should be able to still post things to the city that aren't necessarily popular. So
think about public records and how that ties into if you were to post something in your official capacity and say, as a planning commissioner, I'm putting this out there, then that could, that's a public record then, and there's an obligation to retain that interaction in some form, and the city doesn't have a way of doing that for your personal social media pages. So that's another reason I think that you want to be careful not to do that.
And this is just kind of cracks me up, but there's also a law in the books where employers can't require employees to give their social media passwords to their employer. And just, it's to me, it's just a perspective on how, when social media was kind of first getting going, how employers really tried to control what employees would post, you know, and that the public and the people really were like, whoa, wait a minute, that's my own personal social media, you know, I don't have to give that to my employer so they can track it, what it is that I'm doing. But for me, it's just interesting to see that that had to be passed into law, so employers are kind of back off a little bit. But there used to be a lot of stuff about, you know, sharing company secrets and stuff about your employer that you weren't allowed to do. I think employers, when first really tried to overreach, and then there was some backlash and said, wait a minute, people have some rights here. So that's kind of where we seem to have settled, is lay off discriminatory and obscene things. Everything doesn't have to be really positive towards the city. It can still be posted. And then to keep in mind when you're acting, posting something, just to be clear when you're doing it as an individual. So, any other questions about social media or anything like that? Okay. All right. Okay. So, probably more to come in future trainings about different city regulations, but they're called administrative regulations, and if you're ever curious about them or other ones that apply to planning commissioners, just contact us and we can help you with that. There are, there will be a lot by the time I think the city's done. There'll be a lot of regulations. I want to point out the other items that are in the packet. So the first attachment is something called the Ethics, Public Meetings, and Public Records Training Manual. And this is this 14-page manual that's drafted specifically for the Planning Commission. We have a different one for the City Council, but for the Planning Commission, added some particular information about the legislative versus quasi-judicial process, which is in a little more detail than it would be on the city one. This is meant to be a reference for you moving forward, so if you ever have questions about these kinds of things, you can look here first. It has a lot of good kind of succinct information about these topics. And then what we plan to do is just sort of update this over time, and so you'll be seeing sort of the same thing come to you, but there may be updates to it. But thanks to Christina for pulling this together, and her predecessor, Lauren King, did a nice job, I think, on talking about this. So it starts with ethics, talks about Planning Commission ethics in particular, which, as you know, you all deal with, and that's the bias, ex parte contact, and conflicts of interest that you deal with in your quasi-judicial capacity when you are doing hearings. Tort claims, some information about tort claims and immunity. You know, I think the thing to remember about that is as long as you're acting in the scope of your duties as a planning commissioner, that you will be represented and covered by the city. It's when people start to kind of, quote, you know, go off the reservation and do something kind of crazy, then that's when, if you get sued, then the city would say, well, that person wasn't acting as a planning commissioner, right? They were doing something completely outside of the scope of their role as a planning commissioner. And then there's some information about defamation and then public records and public meetings. So this is a public meeting where we are tonight. You often have public meetings, the Planning Commission does. I can't think of an instance where a Planning Commission has had an executive session, but I suppose maybe it's ever happened. I doubt it. But so being public meetings, there are some rules in terms of notice, minutes, keeping track, having a quorum, those kinds of things. And that's really, you know, that's always on Brenda and Christina's mind, and Sandy too, I think, when we're meeting. But if you ever have a question about that, it's certainly okay to do, hey, point of order, I have a question. And I've always observed Lane County Planning Commission to be really good about that in terms of talking about, oh, point of order, and they're going to talk about things. So definitely feel free to do that. And even if you feel like, I don't know, you've asked that question before, you're not sure, it's no big deal, because probably if you're thinking it, someone else is. And these guys probably are already kind of talking. I know when I walk in, I'm always counting heads, like, okay, one, two, three, four, okay, we got enough. You know, we can do this. So that's part of our job, is to make sure that the meeting goes well. So, then the next attachment we call the cheat sheet, which is a smaller, that's the second attachment. And that was updated in February.
Yes.
And this is just a two-pager, just a high level, or actually I think it's, yeah. Just to give you high-level things, public meetings, public records, not as in-depth as the guide, but also the resources that you can look at. Oh, that's a good point. So looking at, let's see. Oh, this also has
the APA's ethical principles,
right,
which was recommended from Phil Farrington. He was a city planner, and now he's been a private planner as well, and now he's back on the private side, but he had recommended providing those to you as well. Those are not state law, but they're good things to think about in terms of your own personal ethics, because there's a legal component to ethics, but there's also just what's the right thing to do. So that's, I think, a good example of just what can be the right thing to do, and it may not necessarily be covered under Oregon state law for all government officials. And then there's also, at the end of that, there are resources.
That's it.
And so that has links to the Guide to Public Officials, which is the Oregon Government Ethics Commission guide that's adopted by state regulation. And so if you act in conformance with what that guide says, it's you can't be prosecuted for a violation if you've done what they've said is okay in that guide.
And then training,
other trainings and other ethics resources as well.
So that's attachment to page 7 of 7. So OGEC definitely is a good resource, just even to call. Just because you call doesn't mean they're going to like track you down or call me or something and say, hey, your planning commissioners are asking questions. So we call them often to try and work through a situation, even if we're pretty sure, just like, oh, well, let's just make sure and get another set of eyes on something. And then they also have trainings that are available, which can be really helpful. So that's definitely something that I would keep in mind. And then the Attorney General's page on public records and public meetings is a little dated, but it hasn't, it's not so out of date, but that talks a lot about public meetings law and public records. So
they have tried to make a lot more accessible online.
So yeah.
They have a new searchable database of, you know, if you have a question about something that's a public record, you can search and it will come up with, it has a list of all the types of public records and whether they're exempt from disclosure or not. You don't individually have to worry about that, I think, as long as you keep your city business on your city email and iPad, that's really where it's going to affect you. Your copies of the agenda is just a copy, and so, you know, Brenda's responsible for retaining those agendas. The one thing I want to make sure that we say every time we meet is beware of the reply all on the email, because that can be a public meetings violation. I know that people are pretty careful about that, but if you reply all to an email that comes from staff with some discussion point, and then someone else reads that, and you could be short-circuiting the requirement that public meetings be held open to the public. So just being careful about that.
I am in the category of being an inquisitive person, and I know several of those are as well, but 3 or 4 years ago in one of our legal ethics discussions, it was suggested to the Planning Commission that for someone who has a planning-related question for staff, to do not use email to forward the question. And so it was suggested as a conclusion, don't. And so I realized that some legal standards and processes evolve over time, and I was wondering if that still stands, or has that changed in any way?
There's not a public meetings issue with sending a question to city staff via email. Don't reply all. Don't send it to all your commissioners and staff, or don't copy the rest of the commission in a question to staff. I think there has been discussion previously about how staff will respond to questions, and like staff may not respond directly in email, but may bring that information to the entire planning commission so that everybody has the information. But there's no, I can't think of a reason why you couldn't email a question to staff.
Oh, okay.
Unless Sandy.
Because basically my options as I looked at it from there is to throw out of context question at the end of a meeting, and I figure that's the only opportunity I would have to ask. Because I've got, that's one of the frustrations I've had as a planning commissioner is getting information.
I think send emails directly to staff and that's fine. Communication between staff and an appointed or elected official, just one-to-one, is not a public meetings violation. It's once you bring in a quorum of the public body into the same discussion point. So what you couldn't do is I couldn't go to you and say, hey, what do you think about, for the development code update, changing all the setbacks to, 6 inches? Do you think that's a good idea? And then you say, that's a horrible idea. So I go, oh, Commissioner Land and Commissioner Vose thinks it would be a horrible idea to change the setbacks to 6 inches. What do you think? And then kind of having, using me as a go-through
like a conduit. You can't do that.
To have a discussion, that's a public meetings violation. But that's on, it's sort of on staff not to, to make sure we're not bringing you into that, we won't.
The cautions on that was the fact of discussing something that may be of interest to the entire commission on a person-to-person basis.
Yes, so I think definitely sending questions to staff, I need more information on X, Y, and Z, is always appropriate, but staff may not respond in email, they may do so in a public meeting in verbal or written fashion, depending on the context.
And then, Brenda, as a practical matter, is it helpful for the planning commissioners just to reach out to staff individually, or should they also copy you? So,
Always asked if they could copy me so I know that there's a conversation going on.
Yeah, and then that way Brenda can make sure there's some follow-up, too.
Yeah.
And then sometimes what you might see, following up, let's say you ask a question about something, and I'll do this with the city council as well, and then I will provide advice to the whole council. And say, hey, following up on a question from somebody, here's the answer, and it might just be a separate document that's a memo or something, or I may address it at a meeting later, so they know there's some follow-up, but we don't run into the situation where we have these kind of emails out there sort of circling around. And just the other thing about email, it's interesting, emails, they... I think we've all had the experience where we've read or sent an email and looked at it later and been like, that wasn't quite what I wanted to say, or that's different. So it is nice. I wouldn't not dissuade you from the phone call, because that can always be a nice way to kind of learn some information. And then staff can think, oh, that's probably good for the whole group to know. I might talk about that at the next planning commission meeting. Or someone might say to Sandy, hey, someone called me about this, blah, blah, blah. And it's not, I think what it's meant to do is just to have communication amongst staff be clear so they know what kinds of questions are coming up, and then to be able to respond. So, but yeah, to include Brenda. And if you're not getting an answer back, I would just ping Brenda and say, hey, I asked a question a little while ago, what happened with it? Because they probably are either trying to figure out how to answer it, or they think they have, or something. So, anyway, something to think about. Any other questions along those lines? Okay. All right. Anything else before we get into the?
No, I think that's it. Okay. I just always want to give the warning of reply all, because it's so easy to do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think they've made it easier now to see the difference, but for a long time it was just like a default.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's easy to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. Okay, so the hypotheticals are attachment 3, and these have to involve ethics questions. There are 3 of them. I thought what we would do is just kind of go through them in order. I'll read it, and then we could have a discussion about it. And these are based on actual advice from the Oregon Ethics Commission, so we tried to make them somewhat relevant to planning commissions in particular, and then issues that are occurring now. So, hypothetical number 1. Springfield is facing a housing crisis. Recently, the council received a report that a rise in short-term rentals may be contributing to the lack of affordable housing, as people who own small houses or have extra rooms make more money on short-term rentals to tourists and visitors than renting to long-term residents of the city. The council has directed the Planning Commission to work with staff to develop recommended development code changes to address short-term rentals in Springfield. In the past, you have rented out your spare room to out-of-town visitors on a website. Airbnb is a short-term rental. Your experience with Airbnb went well. You might use it again in the future, but you didn't make a significant amount of money on the short-term rental, and you don't currently have any plans or any short-term rentals advertised. I shouldn't say no any plans. You don't have any current advertisements available. City staff has scheduled a work session and then a public hearing on the new short-term rental code standards. Can you participate in the discussion? Can you vote on the development code amendments? And in which way can you participate? So any thoughts on this one? So I can tell you what we were trying to get at with this question was conflicts of interest, right? So how do you deal with conflicts of interest when you're a planning commissioner? And there are two types of conflicts of interest. There's a potential or an actual conflict of interest. So actual conflict of interest is decision you make is going to equal, you will derive a personal financial benefit or avoid a financial detriment, and that also can apply to your family members as well.
Or businesses that you're associated or you're planning family members are.
Yeah, so businesses as well.
And family members is defined. It's not your spouse's third cousin's nephew. You know, there's a limit.
Right. So kids, spouses, and then I think just nephews maybe.
And then your spouse's children and parents as well. And then people who live in your household. So if you have your teenage son's best friend isn't getting along with his parents and now he lives with you and you're kind of acting as the stand-in parents, then it would also apply to the individual members of your household.
But keep in mind, actual conflict of interest is when you're really, when you have a direct, right, when there's that direct connection. If you have an actual conflict of interest, you're supposed to declare your conflict of interest and not participate, which is different than potential conflict of interest, which is a situation where you could potentially have a financial benefit or detriment applies to all the same family members. So that's the difference there. Potential conflict of interest, you declare, but you can still participate. Declare, and keep in mind, declare every time. So let's say you talk about it in a work session, and then you need to also declare when you get into the regular session to deal with it. So it's not just like a one-time only thing.
Question on that.
Sure.
If we have a public hearing which is continued over to a second date, do you need to declare the second time?
At each meeting.
Okay. Each meeting.
But not each time in the same meeting a topic comes up. So if you talked about topic A and you declared at the beginning of the meeting and then you went on to topic B and then somebody brought back up something on topic A, like, oh, I just remembered.
Right.
You don't have to go back.
Right. But on a different date.
But different meetings, so same date, different meeting, or same kind of meeting, continued hearing, different date.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, so just keep in mind each meeting. And it doesn't hurt anything to declare it.
Right,
you know?
So I'm assuming that your hypothetical one is the example of, yes, you definitely have a conflict of interest. You stand to benefit or lose, and therefore, no, you couldn't. I mean, if you're talking about your friend who has an Airbnb room,
right. That's
okay, you're interested, but you don't stand to gain or lose. But this is your property, you do.
So do you want to tell
them? Yeah, so if you're on the city council where you're making the final vote on that, then definitely an OGEC has an opinion that says that. We called OGEC staff and asked them kind of about this, specifically if it's the Planning Commission. And for legislative code changes, you only make recommendations to council. And so in that scenario, even though that's a very formal process and you may decide for public appearance purposes that you don't want to participate, it's not actually under the law an actual conflict of interest because you're not making the decision. The city council could act against the Planning Commission's recommendation. So it's under the law a potential conflict of interest, but I think it is one where you would want to carefully consider
public perception, and what is the, does the public get that technicality of law that it's not actual? It doesn't, note that it doesn't change the analysis whether you currently have anything listed or don't currently have anything listed but might in the future. It applies the same way. If you're on the council, it's an actual no matter what. If you're at the planning commission, it's a potential conflict of interest no matter what. Unless you've sort of, they left this out of, like, if you've permanently renounced that you are absolutely never again going to participate in any short-term rentals, mm-hmm. and you've firmly made that decision, then that would be a not an actual conflict of interest. But I think it could be hard to prove that to someone.
Well, you've asked Grandma to move into that room that
you
had.
Yeah, maybe that room. Yeah, right.
In a situation, it's a hypothetical, but say you're doing business with a person and they are, say, a planning commissioner, and they can influence stuff. So, I mean, just because someone's a friend and not a family member, if you do business with him in other factors.
Mm-hmm. I would think about, for quasi-judicial, I would think about bias and how bias could relate. For legislative, if it's not, for legislative type decisions like code changes, if it's not affecting, you know, your individual business, then, I mean, you can always announce to people whatever connections you have in the community, and I think that's a good government practice to say, I'm really good friends with XYZ person. It's not an actual conflict or even a potential conflict under the law, but I want people to be aware that that's where I'm coming from. It's not going to impact my decision making, you know. But so even if it's not under the letter of the law, it can be good to just put that all out there, I think.
So one thing we run into is changing codes on buildings, and I'm thinking, for instance, with ADUs, we changed whether it has to look like the original house and what the pitch of the roof has to be and all sorts of things like that. But if this sort of code applies to not just something specific like ADUs, but any house redevelopment, wouldn't that make it so anybody that owns a house that within the next however many years that plans to redevelop their house? I guess my question is, if anybody has a reasonable possibility of renovating their house, and there are codes to how you have to renovate your house, and a changing code might make that more expensive, doesn't that apply the exact same way as the possibility of having a short-term rental in the future?
So I literally sent an email to OGEC today that almost exactly says that. So for the Planning Commission, the good thing for you guys is what they said is it's just potential conflicts of interest.
Right.
When we get into the code update, it's likely that every meeting and work session, we're just going to do a quick roundtable.
Right.
Like, I own property in Springfield, or I might buy, or I'm planning to buy property in Springfield.
I have a potential conflict of interest. And we'll have the same advice for advisory committee, same deal. So just declare it. Potential, still participate. Where we get into a little more complicated situation would be for the city council, and that's where we're trying to get advice from OGEC, that, because they're going to make that final decision. So is there a difference between just somebody who owns a house, right? Or a difference between somebody who is a property investor, right? So that's the kind of, like, initially we were sort of thinking about folks we know, like, oh, we better think about this because they do this. And then we looked at it more and called, and we were like, oh, we might need to think about all of the city councilors in a way. So anyway, we'll have that advice for them. But for you guys, I think it's more straightforward. So potential conflict of interest. So your initial thought was where I was initially when I was working through these hypotheticals. I was like, oh, that's a totally an actual conflict of interest. And we threw in these facts about, well, you don't do it very often and you're not that into it, to try and kind of throw you off. It's not the issue of whether, you know, this is your main source of income or just any source of income, right? So we're not talking about, there's not an amount here. It's whether you're going to get that direct benefit. But because you're an advisory body and what you're doing is making a recommendation, albeit a very formal recommendation, right? You do a lot of work. Technically, under Oregon ethics law, you're still in potential conflict of interest. So, anyway.
For those legislative, when you're not the final decision maker.
So, for that. So, you'll start to see that as we move into the development code project, you guys will be declaring potential conflicts of interest all the time. So that'll be the idea there. Yeah. So, okay. Any other questions about that hypothetical? Did I miss anything in that one?
No, I think that was good. Okay, go on to number two.
Okay.
So this one should hit, I think, maybe close to home for at least one of you. And this comes from a staff opinion. In addition to working as a planning commissioner, you're also a planner. You work for a private planning firm that's been hired by a developer to submit a master plan application to the city for review, and that has to be approved by the planning commission. The master plan's likely to be opposed by the neighbors. If the planning commission approves the application, then it's likely to be appealed to the city council because we know that there are people in the community opposed to it. So the first part of this question is, do you have a conflict of interest regarding the master plan decision? And then the second part is, if that master plan decision's appealed, could you, in your professional capacity, appear in front of the city council to represent your firm's client?
Thinking about what I would do in that situation. So yes, I would have a conflict of interest because it would be work that I do and get paid for. And then if the master plan decision was appealed, I think for public image, I would not. I would have somebody else from the firm.
Go ahead and do the presentation.
Yes. Yeah, because there'd be potential bias from the city council since they appointed me to planning commission. And yeah, just public, it would look really terrible, I think.
Yeah. And that's, and so that what OGEC staff said was, in terms of whether it's an actual or potential conflict of interest, it would depend on how you're compensated. Mm-hmm. So if your compensation, if your firm is compensated more if the application's approved, or if it's somehow contingent or dependent on your success, then that is an actual conflict of interest. If your compensation is a flat fee and it's already been paid and it doesn't depend, your success at the Planning Commission does not depend, then it's a potential conflict of interest because obviously having a more successful application could improve the reputation of your firm. But again, it's public optics and whether you feel comfortable or not participating in the decision and how you participate. If it's an actual conflict of interest, one thing that OGEC has clarified is that you're prohibited from discussing it, but it's a matter of personal preference whether you stay on the dais silently or step out and sit in the audience or leave the room altogether. So there's no legal requirement to physically move yourself. That's a matter of personal comfort.
And I think the Planning Commission can have a role in that too, in terms of saying, if you're comfortable with that person staying there,
yes,
because there are reactions that you might have or see. And so I think out of form in the past, I've advised people to step down so that you're not at the dais, that you can stay in the room, but in the back or whatever, if it's something that you're interested in.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be something that's important to staff or the commission. I think you all take that into account really well. My experience has been that everybody is far more conservative in what feels right to you than what the law, the bright line legal rules are, which has been good. And then at the city council level, it's not an actual conflict of interest because you're not acting as a planning commissioner. So you're going in so it's not a conflict of interest test. Those rules don't apply to you in your professional capacity. However, there are rules about using your official capacity for a private benefit. And so that's where somebody has to be really careful that they're not presenting themselves or somehow getting a better reaction from the city council because you're also a planning commissioner. So I think the legal answer may be that it could be fine to do that, but it would be you'd have to be extremely careful in how you did it. So I think the best advice is just not to. There are specific rules that say you could not, conflicts of interest or benefit aside, you cannot represent a client for pay in front of your own commission. Mm-hmm. So that's like outright prohibited.
So let's think about that. I suppose though, if she decided to go before the city council and it was a quasi-judicial appeal, then the city council would have to announce that they know her, but they don't have a conflict of interest?
Well, it wouldn't be conflicts of interest for the city council, but it would be bias, and
right.
So they would be opened up to being challenged by the audience for bias. So they would have to proactively state, planning commissioner, but we have no bias, and then anybody in the audience, and if it's opposed and it's an appeal, people are going to say, wait a minute.
Yeah. You appointed her. How do you not? Yeah. So
when in doubt, sit it out.
Yes. Definitely. So interesting. Okay, number three. A large national cellular service, Cellular Inc., is offering a new cell phone plan exclusively for local government officials and employees. Springfield gets great coverage from Cellular Inc. due to a few well-placed cell towers located around Springfield. As part of the new plan, as long as you're a member of the Springfield Planning Commission, you can get $20 off your personal cell phone bill per month. You pay your cell phone bill personally and are not reimbursed by the city, but you sometimes use your cell for city business, like checking your email online and calling city staff. Can you sign up for the discounted plan? So the one everyone hates.
I was really confused by this because I went through the city council agenda and was like looking through like refunds that the city gives its employees, and I saw that the city councilors receive a refund for their tax and their internet costs each month. So then I was like, what's that? Are they on the special plan? So that just may be like another rabbit hole to go down, but that complicated what I initially thought.
Sure.
About the
sure. Go ahead. What we're trying to get at with this was gifts. And public officials receiving gifts, and what does a gift mean under Oregon law? So the city council is reimbursed for their, to your question about that payment, they're reimbursed for their expenses. So they independently sign up for their cell phone plans there.
Yeah.
That's not, whether they get any kind of discount or not, I'm not.
Yeah.
I don't think so. But so as public officials, you're prohibited from using your official position for personal financial gain for you or for your family members or for, again, businesses that you or your family members are associated with. There are exceptions. So an exception to that is a gift. So if a gift comes from somebody who has no legislative or administrative interest in the work you do as planning commissioners, then it's exempt from that because it's not, I mean, essentially it's not related to your work, really. So an example of that, I think, that was a recent one was there's a raffle program for public safety officers who could sign up to this charity that raffles off things for public safety officers. And so that charity really had no interest in what, you know, an officer who's a traffic patrol officer, the decisions that officer makes, whether to pull people over and cite them or not. A charity that gives out, you know, raffle tickets doesn't have any legislative or administrative interest, so therefore a gift of a raffle ticket is, or a gift of the eventual, of the prize package is not violating the gift rules. If the gift comes from someone that does have a legislative or administrative interest in the work that you do as a planning commissioner or a public official, then you can accept the gift, but only if it's up to $50 per year. So an example of that could be Springfield Utility Board says you're a public official, and we have this, you know, banquet we're going to put on, or the Light of Liberty. We're going to comp you $225 tickets to Light of Liberty as a planning commissioner. That's under $50 per year. Springfield Utility Board is an applicant in front of you occasionally, and so they have a legislative or economic interest in your work, but it's less than $50 per year if you don't accept other gifts. So with the cell phone, what are your thoughts on this cell phone discount?
Oh, I'll be good. Yeah. Okay, good. I was going to ask another question.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. In reference to what she brought up about city councilors being reimbursed for their communication expenses. Now, I presume that each councilor has their own plan, but I noticed that everyone is reimbursed the exact same amount. So that doesn't necessarily mean that matches their expense.
Right. So what they do, that's a good point. So the city charter states that city councilors can't be paid, but they can be reimbursed for expenses. And then they can, it says like you can prescribe a plan for reimbursement. So then what the council did was they have what they call their operating policies and procedures, which are on the website, and those are their like administrative regulations, how they run their business. And it has everything from appointing boards to the agenda for a city council meeting. And then one of the items is reimbursement. So they've set a set reimbursement for cell phones and for internet, and just everyone gets the same, and then you get your own plan and figure out what you're doing, and then you get the same. So
maybe we've got a little ahead or a little behind. But
yeah, like that's, you know, I don't know. Somebody would have a different plan than someone else, and instead of trying to keep up with that, they just set a set amount, and that's the reimbursement that you get.
Okay, thanks.
So because this would be more than $50 a year, then don't.
Right.
Correct. Yeah. And they have a legislative or administrative interest because this company has cell towers. They could be an applicant in front of you.
Right. Yeah. This is the kind of stuff city employees hate, these ones.
Yeah.
So, but it's just better not
so,
to accept.
Taking this a little further, so they're offering this to local government officials. So if we had a police officer I mean, they have no direct interest in cellular, and from a policing perspective, but the city has some authority. Is it unethical for the police officer to accept this?
It's position by position, so it comes down to what interest they have in the individual's decisions. So a you know, traffic patrol officer probably has, you know, probably has no legislative or administrative interest, so it wouldn't be unethical for them to accept that discount. But for you as planning commissioners, it would be. I think this there can be offered like hotel discounts for public officials, so that's another example of where you see these come up.
And I think the rub is often, you know, the private sector does a lot of, you know, incentives and gifts and stuff, right? That's sort of part of the culture often. But they only like to do that to people that they do have a legislative interest in, right? Because they're trying to persuade you to buy their product or go with them. And so, you know, the likelihood of someone working at the city who's unrelated to cellular being able to take advantage of this offer is less, right? It's the people who Cellular Inc. or whatever there is going to be like, oh, I want to engage with you to get you to do this, and then that's when we have to be like, yeah, I can't do it. So it's a hard thing to communicate sometimes to private sector folks because they just don't always get it.
One of the staff opinions that this was taken from had to do with a FirstNet, a firefighter specific plan or emergency responder specific plan that was discounted. And so what they said was that the general officers at the lower level that don't have any purchasing sort of authority or decision making could take advantage of the discount, but their supervisors and their higher level managers could not ethically take advantage of the discount because they made decisions on whether to go with cellular provider A that's offering this discount package or cellular provider B when they're talking about their sort of official cell phone service. And that was the example that was taken from. One thing, one other thing to keep in mind. I was had something else I was going to say, and then I just ran out of my head. Okay.
Anecdotally, I worked for a gentleman in Washington State who had a hunting lodge and fishing lodge in Alaska, and he flew all kinds of public servants up there and then got all kinds of contracts from those public servants. It was very questionable.
Yeah. Yes. I remember what the thing I was going to say is. If there's a discount plan, so if we change the facts slightly, and this discount plan was available to anybody who's a volunteer, then it's the gift, if the gift's being made available to public and non-public officials on equal terms and conditions, then it's not, and it's an exempt gift. So if it's the fact that you volunteer and you happen to volunteer for a public entity, but you could be volunteering for a nonprofit, non-public entity, and then so whether you're a public official or not is sort of irrelevant, then you could take advantage of the discount program. The example there was that Microsoft, as part of its licensing, makes available to people for, you know, a greatly discounted cost. They can download the same product that they use at work, so it's greatly discounted. Microsoft makes that product available to anyone who any employers who have that licensing agreement, and so it could be hospitals, governments, private employers, and it's all on the same terms and conditions, and so it's not a gift.
Yeah. If we're at a point where I can backtrack on a couple of items, at that point. Okay, one item is on quorum. Now, we know what the quorum requirements are at the council level and the planning commission level. I've been on numerous different advisory committees, some of which conduct public hearings, and I found in some cases where their quorum requirements are different. Mm-hmm. So is that all according to the individual committee's bylaws, or is there a standard that should apply to all groups that have public hearings? You're required to quorum requirements.
Yeah. In terms of just parliamentary procedure, each body can set its own quorum, but there's a default of 50% plus one if it's not specified.
Yeah.
That's sort of the
So if it is specified as something other than that, that's fine.
But think about a committee like the BPAC, right? It's kind of a big committee. You know what I mean? Like, they might have lots of people, and different people show up at different times. Like, they're going to think about their quorum differently than this kind of body. So it is good to have that kind of flexibility.
Okay. But it's good to think about this. Curious because of the fact they do conduct public hearings. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
The other thing that I wanted to comment on in regard to the compliance with the State Ethics Commission. Mm-hmm. Now, they went electronic about 4 years ago or something like that. And, of course, the first couple of years, there was all kinds of glitches.
I remember.
And so I've found that even at this point in time, and I don't know about this year, that I've not ever been able to get into their into their site. So the option is to call them and provide the information verbally.
Will let you do that. Oh, that's good to know. The way I was reading it, it was like you had to do it online.
I asked last year, the year before, the person I was talking to, I said, are there very many people that are having the same problem getting into the site? Mm-hmm. And she said, hundreds of people have that problem. And a matter of fact, when Amy Soa used to oversee our compliance, she got to the point where she just told anybody that had a question, call the Ethics Commission. Because she was overloaded with people having problems with it. And so I don't know whether they're going to straighten it out or make it simplified or not, but they seem to want to create a lot of hurdles, and meanwhile you got to legally comply.
Well, that's good to know. Any other questions? I think I would just leave you with Commissioner's Vo's comment is a good comment, is that when you're thinking about ethics, public meetings, your duties to be an impartial decision maker, those kinds of things, I think it's really helpful to just kind of listen to your own intuition and your gut, to be like, even if you don't know like what the issue is, but you think, there's something weird about this, then that's a signal to talk to one of your fellow commissioners, or talk to us, or Brenda, or somebody, and just like talk it out. And sometimes you can talk it out and it's not a problem, or sometimes it's like, that's what I gotta do. So I would just think about that, and I know this is a lot of information, but you know more than you think you do, you know what I mean? Like, and you'll be confronted with it, you'll be like, I wanna ask them about this. And we're always more than happy to talk with you about stuff like this.
And always better to have conversations proactively than I already did this. Is it going to be a problem? We don't want to have those conversations. We really want to have the next week. We're having this, you know, this topic in the meeting, and what do you think about?
Or assuming.
Or hypotheticals too. Hypothetically, if I were to buy a business that does XYZ, and then can talk through that with you.
Yeah, for sure.
Question. So if it turns out where you don't initially think that you have conflict of interest, and as the hearing, if you'll call it that, progresses, you're realizing that, you have a conflict of interest, is it appropriate at that time to either excuse yourself?
Declare it right then. So you deal with a conflict of interest when you're met with a conflict of interest. So you're not required to be like clairvoyant and understand everything before you walk in, right? So in fact, we had this situation. Councillor Piccinieri declared a potential conflict of interest with the ADUs. And when the council started evaluating ADUs, he didn't have any deal, you know, it's just like a no dealings with it. But in the time, known people who were in that business and decided to invest with them. So then he starts declaring the potential conflict of interest like in the middle of that process, like at a work session, and then moves forward and does it. So you deal with conflicts as you meet them is the way the statute goes. So think about that. So don't feel like you have to like proactively think like, oh my gosh, you know, would I maybe? When you deal with it, you can always stop it. And you can always, you know, I know it would feel awkward, but you can always stop a meeting and just say, hey, I have a question. You know, wait a minute, and we can recess, and we figure it out, get you back. It's no problem.
And the same thing with, like, ex parte contacts. If you realize, like, I did have a discussion with someone. I didn't realize that was what this is. Like, it's always okay to stop it.
It's pretty easy to visualize. You don't realize a particular person was a party to this. Situation.
Realize that's what they were talking about. This person came up to me and was talking about something really weird, and I didn't know what it was, and now I'm realizing this is what they were talking about. I think that could happen.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. It's always fun to come, so see you next year.
Thank you.
You'll see me.
Sure.